Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
This is BT, and welcome to Inside the Episode. Today, David and I are going inside episode 125, Who the Fuck Are You? So I've got David here with me. David, how you doing?
I'm doing great. We're going to go do a deep dive.
Yes, we are. This was a great episode. I absolutely love it because it brought us back to those early years. And I love when you wax poetic about when you were first starting out and you were putting all these things together. And you actually mentioned in the episode about the seminars for the network marketing companies. Looking back on that, you must have met some very interesting people along the way. Are there any stories you might be able to share with our listeners about those rooms you were in? Maybe what you learned about yourself and about business in general from being in those rooms?
Well, here's an interesting thing. Like when I first started, because there we didn't have any money, and every dime that we had to be, you know, put to the best amount of work that you could get out of it. You know, like it was like Holiday Inn type rooms. Like we weren't in 5-star hotels.
Yeah, there was no coffee service.
No,
there was no snacks at break.
No. We would look for companies that would donate rooms to the public, like boardrooms that they weren't using. I can't tell you how many seminars that I put on live that were not in hotels. They were in boardrooms. They were in conference rooms of other companies. They were in lodges. I did one in a this one's really hysterical. I actually did a seminar in a Bloody Mary bar in northern Wisconsin, up in the UP, or actually, was it in Wisconsin or was it in the UP? It was up there. It was
up north.
It was up north. Yeah, it was up north up there, and it was on a Sunday, and they put a table in the back of the bar, and everybody was hungover. They were drinking Bloody Marys and eating cheese and watching, getting ready for the Packers game to come on. And they're smoking, right? They're all smoking in this bar, right? And I'm thinking, what the fuck am I doing up here? Like, this is the craziest damn thing. Most of the people, this is totally true. Most of the people got to the bar on their snowmobiles.
Wow.
I was like one of the only cars in the parking lot. It was a one day deal. And they actually had paid to be there. They were part of a network marketing company that I was selling to at the time, and they showed up, and I'm thinking to myself, and they're drinking Bloody Marys through the whole thing. That eventually switched over to beer, but they were constantly turning around to check the Packers score while I was explaining consciousness and the stick man and how to sell better. And like, I was like, it was a trip. It was a real trip.
You could probably fill volumes about stories like that of the places you were. Cause it's much different now. I mean, the places you go now, obviously for the last 15 years, big giant ballrooms, large places, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people coming to see you. It's a far cry from, you know, those northern experiences you had back in the day. But it's cool to hear those because you have to start somewhere, right? I mean, you had to go somewhere. You got to go where the people are.
I've spoke from, you know, like a person's living room, a bar, all the way up to a full-blown stadium where there's 20,000 people. So, and everything in between.
Yeah, and every one of those situations, it's always about the process and your teaching, whether I've seen you in rooms that are small and I've seen you in rooms that are big. It doesn't matter how many people there are, you seem to bring the energy regardless, because if you can touch one person, you know, that's no different than touching thousands.
Right.
And I think that's what's so cool about what you do. Speaking of touching thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, if you will, you mentioned in the episode about Billy Graham, and he was a huge influence on you when you were growing your business. And, you know, we're kind of in the shadow here in North Carolina of Billy Graham country. What is it about him specifically that drew you in?
I remember my grandmother watching Billy Graham when I was a kid, and anytime he had a crusade, she would watch it. And the interesting thing is I actually have several memories around this. One of the memories was that my grandmother would, like, she would send a check for like $20 or something to his crusade. And my mother would make comments about it. My mom didn't know if Billy Graham was a con man or, you know, what he was. And, but she would very, very often, like, when we were back down, so we lived in a two flat at the time, and my grandparents lived upstairs and we lived downstairs. And I remember when we would go back downstairs, because we often had dinner with them, my mom and dad would be talking about it. My dad would be like, why is she sending that guy money? And be like, I don't know. And I don't know if you could trust that guy. You know, it was all that kind of conversation. But I would sit there with her and I would watch what he was doing when I was a little kid. Now, I didn't know then why I was watching this, but I was really enamored with the way that he could hold the attention of a football stadium full of people talking about religion and God and, you know, coming to Jesus and all of that. And with the charisma and the authority that he spoke with. So when I started to study from the perspective of people that were great orators in throughout all of history and basically didn't have any speaking training, Billy Graham was right at the top of the list. He didn't go to the International Speakers Association to learn how to speak. He learned how to speak by going to the Florida swamps and speaking to the tree stumps and the cypress trees in the swamp. Wow. That's a true story. He has a biography. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Was it relatively recent?
It was
just I shouldn't say recent. He's got one called Just As I Am.
That's a book. That's
Just
it.
As I Am. 1997. So not recent.
Yeah. Just As I Am. It's a great book. But, okay. But yeah, I'd like to answer your question. That the reason was because he has spoken to more people than any other person on the planet live.
That's amazing. Yeah, I don't know much about Billy Graham. I do remember snippets from my youth about him being on the television and my grandparents tuning in to watch his sermons and just to be able to see. He always seemed like a kind man. I mean, he did have some controversial views, of course.
Yeah.
Most people do. But he always seemed to have something that just sort of drew you in. So it was really interesting when you shared your experience, because I've heard you talk about him before, but it was cool in this episode for you to go in and talk about one of those people that you emulated. You also emulated Tony Robbins, obviously. You actually sold your boat to get to your first seminar with him. That moment had to be surreal to see him live and in the flesh. What do you remember most about that experience of going to that first seminar with Tony?
What I remember, there's two main things have stuck in my mind over the years. The first one was that it was a bit of a culture shock, right? Because you've got a few thousand people and they're all jumping around. Like if anybody's ever been to a Tony Robbins seminar, you know, you do a lot of jumping around, a lot of dancing, a lot of cheering, you know, that type of thing. But what I remember about that part was feeling very uncomfortable around all these people that were jumping around and screaming and yelling, but also being elated by the idea that there were so many people that were talking positively and looking to do something better with their life. And I had never seen that many positive people in the same room before. Like, it blew my mind. And it gave me a tremendous amount of hope, because where I came from, there wasn't a lot of hope. There was not a lot of real positivity. There was a lot of negative talk about the way life is type thing. And the second thing was that for a brief moment, I thought to myself, how cool would that be to do what Tony's doing? And I quickly shut it out of my mind, because whenever I start to think about like doing something like, oh, that'd be cool. That'd be cool to do that. My mind automatically goes into a place of trying to figure out what are all the steps in order to do that. And when I saw that with Tony, my mind went to the place of just having no clue how would I bridge where I am now to where he is. Like, it seemed to me there wasn't enough time in a lifetime to be able to do that. And that just shows you how far away I thought I was in my mind from where he was at the time.
Yeah, well, you picked a couple of great men there to emulate as you grew your business into what it is today. We'll close with this. You mentioned that there's a secret that you learned early on that changed everything for you, and you said it with, you know, very much vigor in the episode. You can't care if you fail. So that's really powerful when you're moving forward in business, because if you start to care about what everybody else thinks, if you start to care about what this thing that happened and this thing that happened, it's this huge snowball effect. So I know there's people that are listening to this that they do put a lot of effort into doing their very best, but then they fail and then they start to get worried about what others around them may be thinking. And then they go into this spinning wheels and being stuck. How does a person get to that place, long story short, where you can't care if you fail?
Well, I could just tell you how I got there. And the reason I got there was because I saw a little bit of this in myself, where I was obsessing about the idea of not failing and or what would go wrong if I did fail. And what I see people do is they actually start to plan their failure out in their mind. Like, what am I going to tell people? What excuse am I going to create? What's that going to look like?
Essentially opening the door and welcoming in the
family. Yeah, they're creating the entire plan of how it's actually going to happen. And I realized in my own imagination of how I was viewing that, how much control that had over my thinking, how much I was obsessing about what failure would look like. And I thought, wow, like, that is really crazy that it has that much control, because I'm worried about what other people think and how am I going to frame this and how am I not going to be completely embarrassed and mortified and, you know, how am I going to survive afterwards? Like, what am I going to do to make money after I screw this up, type of thing? So I thought, you know, if I change my viewpoint on it and not care if I fail, because the idea is that I'm going to accept this premise. I'm going to continue to move forward until I win, until I get the result that I'm looking for. Failure is going to be part of the process. It's either going to be micro or macro. That depends on me. But if I spend any more time considering failing, considering what that looks like, preparing for the crashing and the burning, I'm going to create that in my life. And I'm not using my energy and my focus wisely, because I'm not focused on a solution. I'm not in a energetic problem-solving mode. I'm not using my imagination in the right way to imagine what it would be like to break through, to win, to solve the problem, to build the image of what the company actually looks like. So that was it. That was it. I was like, no, I just don't care. Because if I do that, I take its power away.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the big thing that I take away from that is that every problem has a solution, period.
Period.
And you are going to face adversity. There's going to be times when things just don't work. You are going to fail. But that failure, actually, you're going to be able to look back on that failure and say to yourself, like, look, had this not happened that way, I wouldn't have gotten this, or I wouldn't have learned this. Steph turned me on to this amazing documentary we just watched. It just came out, called Biggest Little Farm. It's the same exact situation. I would encourage those of you who have not seen it yet to go and get it. It's on iTunes right now. It just came out. It's about this small farm. And it's amazing the trials and tribulations that this farm goes through over the course of 7+ years, and about how one thing that looks like it's going to kill the business actually teaches them something that makes the business better. And it's very steeped in universal principles. So if you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend you go see it. And the reason I bring that up here is because Steph and I, after watching it, and she's seen it several times now, she's absolutely in love with it. She says, and we both agree, that every single problem, no matter how difficult it might seem in the moment, is actually a blessing in disguise, and it does have a solution. You just got to look at it through that lens. So I think that's really what you came up with here.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a question.
I love it. Yeah, this was an amazing episode. Well, thank you so much for sticking around with me, David. This has been amazing. Hopefully we'll get some good feedback on this one. Remember, you can always send us your emails at tsm@davidnagel.com or hop on our voicemail hotline. We'd love to hear from you in person, speakpipe.com/David Nagel. Thanks so much, David.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.